today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
To actually leave my thumbprint on youth and high school basketball by hopefully changing the way coaches approach training their players.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
Hi, this is Jay Billis of ESPN. You're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. I'm sweating already.
Thanks for tuning in to our effort to bring timely, relevant microclinics to coaches all across the world. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the most advanced shooting machine in the world. This is Rich Sislowski, and today I'm excited to flip the script on our host, Alan Stein. We're going to put him through four episodes this week to help the Pure Sweat fam get to know the man behind the mic. Let's jump right in with part one of four. All right, Alan, I want to talk a little bit about your background in the performance training realm, particularly your years with high school basketball at DeMatha and Montrose Christian. First, what was your primary goal or role when you were with those programs?
My initial goal when I joined up with Montrose was to cut my teeth on the performance field and to work with the best high school players. And Montrose and DeMatha in the D.C. area had the best players in the area. And I wanted to work with the best players in the area to see if this budding philosophy that I was starting to create in the performance world, how well it worked. I mean, I can kind of consider those my labs, especially Montrose in the early years when I was very unpolished, to see if all the things that I had done and read and studied kind of put those into works, and to have an opportunity to be at a Montrose Christian where I'm working with primarily Division I level or future Division I level college basketball players. That was the initial goal, and to basically, that's how it started. And then the secondary goal was to actually leave my thumbprint on youth and high school basketball by hopefully changing the way coaches approach training their players.
And then on those coaching staffs, what was the role? Like what were you responsible for with those programs?
Initially, it was literally almost in a box, just the performance training. So, of course, when I started at Montrose, it was really referred to as strength and conditioning. So I was in charge of the quote-unquote the weight room and some of the agility and quickness stuff on the court. Once Coach Vetter started to appreciate my own basketball background and my affinity for things like leadership and teamwork and being a role model for young people, my role would slightly expand. I never did anything with X's and O's, never did anything with strategy, but I certainly tried to be, in addition to being a role model, to inspire and to motivate and to encourage and to basically echo everything that Coach Vetter or Coach Jones wanted done in the program. So I often considered myself kind of a specialized assistant coach. I was an assistant coach whose primary duty was performance training.
Now let's talk about that. So you're an integral part of this high school basketball program, a successful one, obviously. But at the same time, you're also traveling around the country doing events and speaking engagements and that type of thing. So how did you manage being a part of that staff, but also being somewhat part-time and not being able to be there on a daily basis at times?
I was very open with both coaches ahead of time and saying that I want to serve your program. I'm a committed member in heart and soul to the program, but I also have aspirations to reach and teach coaches from around the country and eventually around the world. And I also want to affect players. Both were certainly very understanding because they realized they weren't paying me a salary, so I couldn't pay my bills just working at Montrose or just working at DeMatha. So they often gave me many professional courtesies and freedoms to do those things. Coach Vetter, especially in the beginning, also realized that having me kind of travel the world as a champion of him and the Montrose program was good for branding and was good for, I mean, recruiting, to be quite honest. For him to be able to sit down with a player and his parents and say, well, we have a performance coach that speaks for Nike and that works the skills academies and was in Belgium last week is a good selling tool to that person's family to, hey, you should come be a part of Montrose or obviously later on DeMatha.
Gotcha. And so the relationship building piece, I mean, it was, again, you're not there all the time, but I would imagine that all of those
those feathers in your cap, so to speak, probably played well with the players and helped them realize, hey, this is why this guy's not here. But at the same time, kind of give you instant credibility with them and that type of thing. So
absolutely.
What was your favorite part of that job? And maybe it was different at Montrose and DeMatha, but what was the thing that made you want to keep doing it?
You know, the interesting part, there's so many similarities to the way Montrose approached basketball and the way DeMatha approached basketball, but Coach Vetter and Coach Jones approached things very, very differently. A good portion of that was just based on their age. You know, when I started at Montrose, Coach Vetter had already been coaching longer than I had been breathing. So he was old enough that he could have been my father. So he really served as kind of that elder mentor, somebody that I really look up to and would learn from on a daily basis. Now, I've learned just as much from Mike Jones at DeMatha, but he's only a couple years older than I am. So it was more of a peer relationship. So those in and of themselves made the experiences really neat. But again, both guys gave me their unconditional support to do my job. Neither one of them micromanaged. Both of them said, okay, here are the things that are important to me. You know, we want players that are in great shape. We need guys that are getting stronger, all the stuff that coaches want. But they never told me how to do my job. They just allowed me to do my job. And then they made sure that the players understood that this is really important for us and our success. And, you know, one of the things I think Coach Vetter understood very early on is, and I know most head coaches listening can appreciate, your voice will wear thin if you're talking to your players 365 days a year. So he realized that if I can bring in someone else to handle this aspect of the program, they're going to get a different voice. Regardless of my expertise in that specific niche, he just liked the idea of bringing in somebody else. And I think that was, you know, again, we're talking early 2000s, so that was fairly innovative at the time. There weren't many high schools that had a basketball specific strength and conditioning coach in the early 2000s. So I think both guys were really ahead of their time with that.
Along those lines, how did you measure success? I mean, as a performance coach at these schools, was it just tied to how the team did, the success of the team, or were there actual benchmarks that you could look at with individual players that you were working with? I mean, how did you personally measure success in your job description?
Initially, when I was young, I measured it the wrong way. I measured it by outcomes. I assumed if the team was winning, then I was doing a good job. And I guess I was too wet behind the ears to appreciate, well, the reason we're winning is we have really talented players and really smart coaches who put together great game plans. It didn't take long before I realized my number one job as a performance coach is to reduce the likelihood of injury, the occurrence and severity of injury, is to bulletproof the body. So one of my major benchmarks was time lost to injury. Now, I realize that quote unquote luck has a lot to do with certain things. But in my 15 years sitting on the bench of a high school program, never had one ACL injury. Now, that doesn't mean that if someone does have one that they're deficient in their performance work, but we had very minimal time lost either in practice or game to preventable type injuries, ankle rolls. You know, you can't do anything about a broken nose. You can't do, I mean, at least from a strength and conditioning standpoint. So ankle being the primary one, knee issues, we had minimal time lost to those. So that became my number one benchmark. And then certainly we'd have benchmarks that, you know, a freshman comes into Montrose and he weighs 119 pounds. And when he graduates to go to college, he weighs 175 pounds, you know, made significant gains to strength and size. So those were kind of what I was using. But a good portion of it, I always felt at the high school level, my job at those two programs where every player's goal is to matriculate up and play college basketball, one of my primary goals was to prepare them for that so that when they got to whatever college they were going to play for, they weren't learning performance for the first time, which is what a lot of high school kids do. Their first dose of it is when they get to college. So the benchmark of having a player graduate from Montrose or DeMatha, go on to college, and in the first 6 months hit me back and say, Coach Stein, you know, thanks for preparing me. I'm the best freshman when it comes to doing this type of stuff. Those were more things that I was more concerned with than wins and losses. Because as a performance coach, I really have nothing to do with wins and losses other than the fact of keeping these really talented players on the court. I mean, if everybody's injured, we're probably not going to win a whole lot.
Sure. Let's expand on that idea of helping players move on to what's next. Do you feel like being on a high school staff or on the high school bench has helped you at all in developing your sport parenting philosophy? I mean, you got to work with these high school age kids. You got to see how they interacted with parents, how parents interacted with coaches. Did that experience over that amount of time that you were at those two schools, did that help you mold your current sport parenting philosophy? And if so, where, you know, talk about that a little bit.
Without question. And what's cool is both Coach Vetter and Coach Jones have very strict guidelines on parent involvement. Now, again, when you're talking about Montrose and DeMatha, you're talking about the upper 1% of high school athletes. I mean, when you look at the list of players that have played at Montrose and DeMatha, I mean, your Victor Oladipo's and your Kevin Durant's, you're talking about some really unbelievable players. But the relationships and the guidelines that they set forth on how to deal with parents and how their guidelines on how the parents can be the most supportive to their own child to make this process work are absolutely things that have influenced me now that I'm a young father. And, you know, again, it made me appreciate that every parent loves their child more than anything in the world. So it also gave me some empathy that when I see an overbearing parent or somebody that's probably almost talking out of line from a parenting standpoint, they're doing it out of love and they're doing it out of great intention and they want what's best for their child. They just don't always know what's best for their child. So I think I've gotten to see the best of both worlds. You know, I got to learn from experienced coaches that know how to handle parental involvement at the high school level. And now I get to see the other side of it where I have children and I love them more than anything. But I think since I was, you know, I had my expectations tempered learning it the way that I did, I think it makes me a much more relaxed and supportive father of my own children. So I'm not pushing my kids the way that a lot of other parents have pushed theirs. So it's been an invaluable experience.
Sure. And now, I mean, obviously the Bourne backcourt, Luke and Jack are getting into the sports scene a little bit. What are you seeing as a parent on the sideline? What are you seeing that either drives you nuts or that you think is really, really good in the whole youth sports realm?
Yeah. I'm seeing parents that absolutely love and adore their kids and want them to be successful, but that are completely overzealous and respectfully are very misguided. You know, that they believe that very early sports specialization will be the key to their child being the next superstar. And it's interesting. So Luke and Jack have tried several different sports at this point, and they've played with kind of the same community of kids. So I've gotten to know some of the parents because they'll play baseball together and then they'll play basketball together. And, you know, they've been friends at school, and I'm careful about, I never want to tell someone else how to parent their child. That is none of what I need to do, but I throw some hints out that, hey, this is what my background's in. This is kind of my philosophy for what Luke and Jack and eventually Lila will do. If you'd like me to share some more of my thoughts, I'd be happy to share it. But it's a slippery slope because I don't ever want to tell someone how to parent their child. But when they ask me, not for my parenting advice, but for my expertise as a performance coach, hey, do you think it's a good idea for my son to specialize in whatever? Since they ask me, it's not unsolicited anymore. Then I share with them, no, I actually don't think that's a great idea. And here's why. And here's what I've seen in my journey working with Montrose and DeMatha and doing stuff with Nike and USA Basketball. Here are the things that I think you should at least consider. And it's funny because, you know, as you can certainly appreciate, people hear what they want to hear. I mean, I've literally had chats with parents for 30 minutes on the sideline about going against sports specialization, and then they turn around and all their kid does is play one sport. But, you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to change somebody's opinion, but I don't mind sharing it when I feel like it's asked for.
Right. And I know this is a topic that both of us are very passionate about. Let's say you and I are going to write a book about it. Give me just a brief overview of what that book would entail. What would that be? What would it be about?
Well, you're the one that shared with me the best 6 words to stay after your child plays a sport, whether it's a practice or game or even an activity, even if they took piano, is I love to watch you play, or, you know, I love to watch you act, or I love to watch whatever the activity was, and that you don't need to say anything else. And it's so funny. Ever since you told me that, I had to condition myself to say that to my kids, and their faces light up when I say it. Like, it makes them really happy that I get enjoyment just watching them play. And the key to that, which is sometimes what I don't think parents understand, is I'm not saying I love to watch you win. I love to watch you score. There's nothing outcome based. I just thoroughly enjoy watching you play. Even if you didn't play very well, that's okay. And that's been very big. And then I know I've put on social media several times the questions that I ask my own children before and after practices and games and activities. You know, did you have fun? Did you listen to your coaches? Were you a good teammate? And did you play as hard as you can? And I'm hoping that I have the discipline and presence to make sure those are really the only 4 questions I ask them throughout their career. And again, if my children ever want the expertise that I have as a performance coach, that will be completely separate than me being their father. I'm there, you know, my primary responsibility is to be a supportive parent and encourage my children to get the most out of youth sports. If they get older and are say, you know, dad, you've been around basketball a lot. I'd love you to help me with this, or can you help me? Then that's a completely separate entity. But yeah, I think from a youth parenting standpoint, being supportive and laying a groundwork and a platform for your children to get the most out of sport should be what's most important. Having them earn a college scholarship or making the all area team or winning a championship, those are all outcome based. And I just think as parents, we can't focus on that stuff. Let's make sure our kids get everything out of sports, which is the life lessons that you and I mean, have been very fortunate to learn and now share with others, and make sure that they enjoy it, enjoy the ride. I mean, they should look back, and sports, I think, should be some of their fondest memories of being younger. And I think the only reason that doesn't happen is from adult interference. Either coaches that aren't coaching for the right reasons or parents that are a little bit misguided. So, and I think you and I absolutely have a book in us to share this stuff. And, you know, we've both taken a lot of pride in not only creating some ideas and content, but being curators. And you and I both have learned from so many different people, so many coaches, so many parents, and so many players. I think we should put together a resource that coaches should follow. And it's, you know, it's funny. I just like names. So of course, as soon as the boys were born, I deemed them the Born Backcourt. But I've kind of always had this idea for a book and call it Raising Champions, but it has nothing to do with champion as far as winning or losing. That has nothing to do with it. It's raising contributing members to society that are kind and that serve other people and that have discipline and have character. And I absolutely believe that sports arguably the best platform to teach those type of characteristics.
All right, man, great stuff. I am so glad we're doing this. Again, for the listeners, this is episode 1 of a 4-part series. We hope you enjoyed this one, and stay tuned for the next one. Until next time, let's get back in the gym.